You're listening to Let's Talk It Through, a podcast about the art and practice of using your voice as a tool for building happier, healthier relationships and deeper self-trust, made especially for folks who wrestle with people-pleasing tendencies. And I'm your host. I'm Michelle. I'm a communication coach for big-hearted, deep thinkers and feelers, and I run things over at The Hearty Fig. Together, we'll explore how to sidestep common communication pitfalls, build confidence in how you show up for tough conversations on your terms, and start creating the kinds of relationships you want and deserve, including your relationship with yourself. Let's get into it. Before we dive in, I did something weirdly liberating earlier this week that I feel like I need to tell you about. So I was talking to a friend and I was sharing just like a work story that was totally unrelated to anything we're talking about here today. But I was telling her about just the fact that I've had a really great relationship with my boss at work at my 9-to-5 recently. And we were sharing stories and I was telling her how one of the first cues that I got that I knew I was going to get along with her really well when she first started talking about my boss is I was kind of keeping an antenna up for if she was ever going to like swear in a work setting. And I told her recently, the first time I heard you drop an F-bomb at work, I knew we were going to be friends. And ever since then, she and I have both commented to each other that it's so nice to just be able to pop into our one-on-one weekly meetings and just swear like sailors with no regard and no apology. And I was sharing this with a friend and I was saying, you know, I think, well, first of all, this friend pointed out that in a weird way, swearing at work is weirdly vulnerable. And we were kind of talking about why that is. And we sort of landed in this place where it's a signal that we're willing to let down our quote unquote professional guard and like let a little bit more of our real selves show through. And as soon as she named that, I felt like it was really spot on. And I was sort of reflecting that back to her. And I found myself saying, you know, at some point I realized if you have a problem with swearing, you probably have a problem with me. And I feel like that's something I tried to hide for a long time, especially writing in this sort of like personal development space. I feel like there was a little bit of a pressure to be like palatable and gentle and a little bit airy and fluffy. And I think I tried to sort of keep my swear bear tendencies under wraps for a while. But more and more recently, I've been trying to just let it go. Because at the end of the day, I mean, if you know me as a friend or in any kind of personal way, you know I'm a sailor. You know I swear like a truck driver. So earlier this week, I decided to do something kind of liberating. I went into Anchor, where I'm hosting this podcast, and I flipped that little toggle from clean to explicit in terms of how my show is categorized. And you know what? It was a little thing, but I feel like it just gave me this micro permission slip to just show up as myself. It's like one less thing I have to kind of filter or be conscious of. And that doesn't mean I'm going to suddenly start being like a crazy truck driver on this podcast every 5 seconds. But also that's part of how I show up. So I guess this is also a good opportunity to sort of plant that seed and get that out in the open. So, you know, if regular swearing or even sporadic swearing offends your sensibilities, you now have that information to make a decision about whether or not you want to stick around and or any adjustments you want to make to your listening habits. So if you want to make sure there aren't kids in the room or anything before you listen, feel free to make those adjustments now that you know what you've stepped into. And if the swearing thing doesn't faze you one bit, then one swear bear to another, I see you, I love you, you're my people. So with that out of the way, let's jump on in. It's March. We made it. We're a month into this podcast. I'm loving it. Still really enjoying the format and still also kind of enjoying this idea of playing with themes for each month. You know, for the last month, we were sort of looking at building balanced relationships and some of the components and strategies that are involved in that. And, you know, from those episodes, by now, I'm sure you've picked up on the fact that I really do take issue with much of the way our society likes to talk about people pleasing. It's a term that gets overused, it gets oversimplified, even weaponized sometimes as a way of pathologizing behavior that's not only common, but also a pretty reasonable response to things that many of us experienced as children, and especially when you start to understand the origins of that behavior. So if all of this is news to you, or you're hearing me say this for the first time and you're like, wait, I'm intrigued, tell me more. I would say go back to episode one. We really spend some time unpacking the term people pleasing, why I don't love it, why a lot of us, I think, bristle when we hear that term and have a hard time relating to it, but also how we can start to understand it with a bit more nuance and compassion so that we can start to take a look at those tendencies that many of us have without having such a visceral reaction to the label. And so over the last month, we've done a lot of exploring around what it can look like for those of us who know we have some people-pleasing tendencies or leanings to intentionally shift some of those behaviors and correct some of those energetic imbalances in our relationships in the name of building more balanced relationships. And there was a lot of tactical goodness in those episodes about navigating compromise, breaking a habit of saying yes when we don't mean it, embracing the responsibility to take up the right, quote unquote, amount of space in our relationships. And yet, it also wouldn't surprise me if you found yourself running up against some resistance or some difficulty when it comes to making some of those changes we've been talking about, or even integrating some of those new ways of being in relationships with others. Like, taking it from your earbuds to your real life might have felt more challenging than you anticipated. And I'm not necessarily talking about like, this is hard or this is new and uncomfortable types of resistance, although that stuff is super normal too. And it would make perfect sense that you might have come up against that kind of resistance as well. But in my experience, there comes a point in the process of letting go of people-pleasing behavior when a bigger sort of fear kicks in, almost like a quiet identity crisis. And I know that's a little bit of an exaggeration. It's a little bit of exaggerated language. But what I'm talking about is that moment where some voices deep in the recesses of your mind like to pipe up with some version of this type of narrative. Those voices might say, whoa, 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 wait a minute. If I'm suddenly going to stop being that person all the time, you know, the kind of person who people know they can count on, or if I stop being quite as easygoing as I've always been, or if I start becoming more direct or more honest or more willing to push back, am I going to lose that thing that makes me special? Am I going to lose that thing that makes me me, or even something that people like about me? What does that all mean? And I want to talk about that today because, frankly, I think it makes a lot of sense that you might be secretly asking yourself that question and feeling those fears. If you've spent a lot of your life perfecting the art of subtly nudging other people's wants and needs to the top of your list of priorities, jumping in to help, keeping other people comfortable, all that stuff, mostly because there's a quiet set of very real but unspoken fears about being rejected or disliked or maybe no longer needed. And then on top of that, you've been rewarded and praised for how well you've learned to do these things. Then of course, you might have started to internalize the notion that that's what makes you special or likable or even who you are. And if that's all true, then it makes even more sense that you'd worry things might start to blow up or fall apart if and when you decide you no longer want to be that person all the time. If being liked feels like part of your identity and proof of your value, then it makes perfect sense that the thought of not being liked would be terrifying. So instead of getting too swept up in that fear, let's gently start to unpack it and poke and prod at it a bit and get curious about it. So that's what we're going to do today. And we're going to do a few specific things to take a closer look at this idea. So first, we're going to be looking at the role of niceness in your identity and what impact that has on your relationships. From there, we'll move into exploring a deeper sense of identity that goes way beyond just niceness and how to find a version that you really connect with. And I have a few exercises to help you do that in a really tactical and almost linear way. In fact, we're going to spend a good amount of time talking through that. So now might be a good time to get a pen and paper handy if you want to do some of that writing or journaling in real time. And then finally, I'm going to leave you with a reframe for your consideration that might just make all of this a little bit of an easier pill to swallow. Let's jump on in. So as I said, we're going to start by taking a closer look at the idea of identity and how we see ourselves. So for many of us who have a tendency to avoid conflict or to people please, there's a strong underlying belief that it's our job to be nice all the time. This harkens back to something we talked about in episode 1 about what Dr. Harriet Breaker calls the 10 commandments of people pleasing, which is that list of rules and expectations we quietly, maybe even unconsciously, hold ourselves to much of the time. And that list includes things like, I should never disappoint anyone or let others down, and I should always do what others want, expect, or need from me. So as time goes on, and the more the quiet rules go on informing your behavior and how you show up in certain relationships, it's not uncommon for this idea of nice to start to find a home at the center of what Dr. Breaker calls your self-concept, which is really just your identity. It's how you see and understand yourself on that deeper identity level. And that cycle makes sense, right? Let's think about it. First, you hold these quiet rules and expectations for yourself about how thoughtful and convenient and helpful you should be in your relationships, which then impacts the way you show up in those relationships because you believe you should show up a certain way. And then in all likelihood, people start to praise or reward you for how thoughtful, convenient, and helpful you are, which then reinforces the idea that that's who you are, that's who you should be. It's how others see you and what they value about you, which only then goes on to reinforce those rules and expectations for how you should behave in the future. And around we go. What I want to call our attention to here is the price we pay when niceness or other similar ideas of being low maintenance or easy to love, things like that, placing those things near the center of identity. It comes with a price. When we glorify and over-identify with niceness, a tension starts to build between that pressure to uphold a certain level of niceness all the time versus some of those truer, deeper, what some of us might even call prickly parts of ourselves. They're the parts we tend to keep hidden because they don't live up to those niceness standards. And when we fear that those pieces of who we are aren't going to be liked, approved of, or loved, then we can end up repeating the cycle of prioritizing niceness and being liked above all else while hiding or de-emphasizing the opinions, objections, needs, and desires that we've deemed less palatable. So in that sense, of course, it might feel scary or off limits to consider letting go of some of those niceness tendencies, right? There's a lot at stake. The more you attach your identity and your value to the idea of how nice you are, the more you may start to doubt whether the real you is actually likable or lovable. And that's heartbreaking. In fact, you might even find that you sort of forget who the real you is over time, if the pressure to be nice has really been driving you in your relationships and how you show up for long enough. So what I want to do is to help you explore what it can look like to de-emphasize niceness within the context of your identity and how you see yourself, and then to find a way of seeing yourself that goes way beyond nice. It's much deeper. This isn't so much about building a new identity as it's about doing some deep cleaning. So like dusting away the layer of niceness that's maybe built up on the surface of how you see yourself over time so that you can start to remember and re-engage with who you really are when all that pressure isn't there. There's an even bigger invitation here, which is to begin the process of accepting the idea that it's okay not to be nice all the time. And I know that might sound kind of silly or like condescendingly simple, but also it might be a little bit revolutionary. It reminds me actually of an excerpt that I love from Glennon Doyle's book Untamed. And here's what she says. Every time you're given a choice between disappointing someone else and disappointing yourself, your duty is to disappoint that someone else. Your job throughout your entire life is to disappoint as many people as it takes to avoid disappointing yourself. And if that all sounds a little conveniently simple, that's totally understandable. But my sense is that if you were to let that statement really sink in and wash over you and to really sit with some of these questions, like how true is it for you that you feel like you always have to be nice to people? What has that cost you up until now? How interested would you be in finding a different way forward? And then what, if anything, makes you nervous about doing things differently? Sitting with those questions may bring up more than what you expect, and or it might ring truer than you realized. And that's okay, because in this next section, We're going to explore how to flesh out and reestablish a sense of self that's built on something richer and deeper and much more interesting and authentic than simply being universally likable. And we'll do this with the help of some reflection and exploration prompts. So this is the part where I'd suggest maybe grabbing a journal or a notebook or even just opening up the Notes app on your phone, because we're about to walk through some prompts. Alternatively, you can also hit pause on this podcast and come back a little later when you're in the right headspace and ready to carve out some time to do this type of exploration. So I'm about to walk you through four journal prompts that are going to help you flesh out that truer, richer sense of identity that reaches way beyond niceness and takes root in much more interesting soil. The first two questions I'm going to present to you are going to be about letting go of some of that pressure to always be nice. So many of us feel a quiet sense of responsibility to be as nice as possible whenever possible. But as we've established, nice often comes with a price. Oh, that rhymes. That was an accident. These questions are here to help you begin the process of accepting that it's okay not to be nice all the time and to start to explore other richer and more meaningful parts of your identity. So let's start with question one. How true does it feel for you that it's your job to be nice all the time? And how do you feel about that? So this is where you might start to explore whether and how this belief shows up for you in various relationships. And I'd suggest paying particular attention to the relationships where this question maybe gives you a twinge of discomfort. So as you think about this question, you might consider different angles of it, like what has it cost you up until now? How interested are you finding another way forward? Again, these are some of the questions from before. And then what, if anything, makes you nervous about doing things differently? Once you've gotten all the thoughts out of your head, and even some of the feelings that might have come up too, try to get them all out onto the page, unfiltered, uncensored. Think of this as just draining your brain. And once you've done that, let's go to question two. Question two is to start to brainstorm. Try to come up with at least 10 words or phrases that feel central to who you are and what make you you, without using or falling back on the word or the idea of niceness. So let's get your idea juices flowing. Do you take pride in being deeply creative? Maybe you're highly resourceful, or you're an excellent problem solver. Maybe you're hilarious and witty, or you're super well-read, or maybe you have an awesome sense of adventure, or you're a deeply contemplative soul, or your sense of style is super on point. Remember, you're aiming for at least 10 words or phrases here. And here's a fun twist for this prompt. I'm really going to encourage you to give this one a try, even if it scares you a little bit. If you get stuck, or even if you just want to flesh out your list a bit more, if you're struggling to come up with 10, invite in other voices. So this can be a really sweet and a really eye-opening way to broaden your list and make sure it's complete. Try asking a few folks that you feel close to and who you trust for some words that they'd use to describe who you are. The important thing here is that you're not tied to any of the words that they offer you, right? You get to choose which words you want to carry forward with you, but you might be pleasantly surprised at some of what they have to offer. So once you've done those first two questions, the next two questions are going to change gears a little bit, and they're going to be a little bit more forward-facing and help you look to the future. So question three is about envisioning. Think about the person you're becoming as you do the work to let go of people-pleasing tendencies and try to list at least 10 words or phrases that describe that person, the person you're becoming or aiming to become. So bring to mind this new version of you who sets boundaries with ease and lovingly chooses how and where they want to invest their energy and time without abandoning themselves, who engages in more difficult conversations with integrity. And if that feels hard, it might also help to think of someone you know and admire who does these things really, really well. Now that you've got that person in your mind, describe them using 10 or more words or phrases, again, without using the word nice or the concept of niceness. And then we're going to move to our final question. So question four is about reviewing and reflecting. go back and compare those two lists you made. The first one was about 10 words or phrases that describe who you really are at your core. And the second list was the list of words or phrases that describes that person you're like aspiring to become as you start letting go of some of your people-pleasing patterns. Look at those two lists side by side and choose a handful of meaningful, resonant words or phrases that you want to carry forward with you. So you might want to notice where your two lists differ and where they overlap. Both will give you some really interesting information. And then from there, choose which words or phrases you want to focus on embodying as you begin to rewrite some of those people-pleasing patterns. List the words that you want to carry forward, and I would invite you to find somewhere prominent to keep that list so that you can visually see it and feel inspired by it often. So that might be a post-it on your laptop. It might be a background on your phone. It might be something that you look at right before you go to bed. Stick it on a bookmark if you're reading a book. There's tons of ways to do this, but having a visual cue or a reminder, something that you see and engage with often, just to solidify these reminders in your brain can be really, really impactful. Once you have this new curated list of words that you really want to carry forward with you, ask yourself, what would it look like to start embodying the person you want to be, who's free from the obligation to please or be nice all the time? And you might consider meditating with the words you chose. You might journal about them. You might pull some cards and do a tarot spread around them. You might even write them on a post-it somewhere prominent and keep it simple. But then the next time that you find yourself in a tough spot, instead of falling back into a default pattern of trying to be nice or keep the other person happy and comfortable out of obligation, you can choose to focus on embodying these new words instead and play with what that might look like in practice. Now, there's one last seed I want to plant as we start to wrap this thing up, especially if the idea of letting go of niceness feels really hard or like it's really baked into who you are. If that challenge resonates, there's a reframe that I'd like to offer for your consideration, and that's this. What if prioritizing niceness this whole time has been creating a barrier, one that prevents the people you care about most from having the opportunity or the pleasure even of getting to know the whole real you? What if niceness has been a mask? And by removing that mask, you could do something incredibly kind and brave by allowing people to really see and know you. Now, that's not to say it'll always feel easy to remove that mask and to let yourself be seen barefaced, or that you'll never run into hiccups or pushback along the way. But the truth is, your essence and your worth are so much greater and more interesting and more rich than just generic palatability or niceness. And letting the people in your midst get to see and feel that, and maybe even leading by example and inspiring them to follow suit, might be the most generous thing you can do. Now, personally, when I've taken the time to experiment with these types of exercises and to really give care and thought and consideration to what my identity consists of when I strip away that superficial layer of niceness, I found it really powerful, and it's the kind of thing that's easy to dismiss because it sounds so simple and rudimentary, but actually taking the time to do it can be really eye-opening and can kind of strike some chords and evoke some feelings that might be unexpected. So if you do decide to give this a try, and I'd really encourage you to, I'd love to hear how it goes. And if you stumbled on any words that surprised you or delighted you or really inspired you along the way, like I've mentioned before, you can always go to theheartyfig.com/podcast, and there's a button with the word message on it, and that'll allow you to send me a little voice memo. I'd just love to hear about your experience and how this goes for you. If you had any big light bulbs or revelations, I'd love to hear all of it, and I will be back in your earbuds next week. Thanks for joining me for today's episode. If you're enjoying the show, let the overlords at Apple Podcasts know. Seriously though, it goes a really long way if you subscribe and leave a rating and a review. Thanks in advance. If you're looking for even more support around the conversations popping up in your life and relationships, head on over to theheartyfig.com. That's the H-E-A-R-T-Y fig.com. And that's where you'll find an interactive, I like to think of it as a part quiz, part workshop that'll offer you some personalized support based on your particular situation and what's chirping you up about it.
The best part, it's 100% introvert friendly and can be done totally on your own time with as many pauses as you need. Most of all, thanks for being here. See you next week.